Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Come from? Why am I here? Is there a purpose to all of this? Join Hercules and Victus and crew as they seek answers to these and other timeless questions and serve Mount Olympus by safeguarding the path of mystic ascension. Welcome to the Pride of Olympus.
Greetings and welcome to Pride of Olympus. I'm your host, Hercules Invictus, and today we are continuing our conversation with Serena Gathke, who is an awesome individual who is aligned with the Heart Center community. Greetings and welcome back, Serena.
Thank you, Hercules. I'm honored by your lovely introduction. Thank you for having me back. I guess you must have liked me last time, right?
Oh, you're fantastic, and you covered so much ground, and we're going to start off by covering some of it again today, just to serve as an introduction for folks who might not have heard the previous show. You have taken your role as a parent to an entirely new level, one that transformed your life. And how you live it and how you share it. And I was very touched and impressed by the tale that you told. So can you please summarize your unique path and your mission?
Certainly. Well, like you mentioned, I mean, everyone's on the path here. I think everyone that's listening is, you know, we're all on a path somewhere. And yes. I think everyone on the earth is on a path, whether or not they know it, or where they're going. And, you know, it is true that probably some people are heading downhill, not uphill, but, you know, I'm sure your audience isn't one of those. But I
right.
try to, I guess, transform what my life is into something that I want it to be. And I desire it to be a spiritual experience, but, you know, I feel like I'm busy, I've got jobs to do, I'm nonstop looking after kids, I'm teaching them because I'm homeschooling, I'm busy. So it's like,
right.
how can I... instead of waiting for the time that I can meditate and then the kid comes out because they just woke up and, you know, instead of getting frustrated by this, I'm trying with all my heart to make each moment the spiritual moment, the spiritual lesson, you know, and grow through the experience rather than trying to escape it. So that's my my current, I guess, place where I am on my path. Yeah.
And that's an awesome place to be.
Yeah.
And you have taken a part of life that is celebrated and made sacred throughout our holy literature, regardless of what tradition you happen to adhere to. And you're showing how that is indeed true. And you could have chosen to focus on all the difficult tasks involved in raising a child. You could have focused upon how your life is suddenly very different and will remain so for a number of years. But instead, you have focused on loving and caring and guiding a new soul who is on our plane of being. And that is amazing.
Thank you. I think it's an opportunity for growth. And, you know, I think every one of your listeners today has an opportunity for growth right in front of them. You know, whatever position or age you are in your life, you know, whether you're still in college or whether you're a grandparent or like sort of a middle age, whatever, you know, whatever is in front of you, that's your opportunity to soar and to grow, you know, your opportunity for service. And that's what it is, you know. It's, you know, my husband often says, you know, it's about serving. You know, we're here to serve. It's not just to like play and entertain ourselves. I mean, that's good too, but, you know, I guess I tell that to my son, but he complains about doing the dishes or whatever. But I think it is true, you know, and we grow spiritually through that service. And,
yes,
yeah, so I'm a mom. I've got three young children, and I've been in the Heart Center for a few years now, and I've also got a blog on the Heart Center called Spiritual Parenting Made Easy, and I also have written a book called Spirituality for Kids. So as you can see, that's my focus, is the whole spirituality and how can I incorporate greater love and harmony and acceptance of what is, you know. I think so often, especially in the Western world, me or us, you know, tend to be trying to reach and grasp at something else outside of ourselves and beyond us and tomorrow and the future and some other existence or possibility, rather than just saying, this is good. You know, you might not live in the house you want right now or have the money you want right now or the dream job or the whatever, but it's good. We're alive, you know, we're healthy,
yes.
We're here, we're hopefully healthy, but we're here to, we can make progress, you know, as long as our heart's beating, we can be growing spiritually, even with our thoughts, you know, even if we can't get out for those who are older, you know, we can still make that progress. And that's, I guess, I think what we're all here to do is to inspire each other to that spiritual progress and to that end, you know.
Indeed. And your book, although written for children, is also very applicable and relevant to an adult's spiritual path as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I was actually listening to the intro there again as it came on, and I was listening to the, you know, the words. I'm not sure if that was you or not. You know, who are we?
No.
Where have we come from? Where are we going? Whatever.
It
was great.
I wrote
it,
but somebody else announced it and recorded it for
me. Okay. Well, that's fine. It was great. I loved it. Anyhow, I was thinking how it's kind of like for kids, too. It's important to help. I mean, I think everyone's journey, you've got to do it yourself, but you can help them to understand, you know, who they are as divine beings. And also, you, the introduction mentioned about the path to the ascension. So I thought that was interesting because one of my chapters in the book mentions about the ascension, you know, for kids.
Yes.
You don't really hear that kind of a teaching. I mean, it's a very, maybe a niche market, however you say it. It's a, you know, you don't find that many books that cover all kinds of new age topics for kids, maybe Christian. And there are a few that are sort of non-denominational, but I haven't seen anything about the ascension or anything like that. And I was wondering if it would be okay if I could read some of that.
Of course, that would be incredibly awesome. I put a link to your book on Amazon on Facebook, so folks can just click right there and purchase the book.
Thank you. That's so kind of you. Yeah, we have. You can buy the book, which is barely past the actual cost, just a few dollars more, and it benefits the Heart Center. And that's available on Amazon, and you can also buy it through the Heart Center, too. And if you're interested, you can also download a free e-copy, so just the e-version, you know, the PDF download of the book from the Heart Center, which is on the Heart Center homepage, actually, heartcenter.org. So if they're interested in that, that's there, too. Yeah, so this is one of the chapters.
Well.
Yeah, thank you. The book is all completely different, as you know. Every chapter just was different, but one chapter ended up being a story, and that was chapter 7. And one of the reasons why I like this, I liked how it ended because I didn't expect it to end that way. And in my journal writing, which I'm doing in the evenings, I'm trying to, as we all are, you know, I'm trying to connect with the divine, you know, and whatever I'm supposed to get, because I think it's awesome what David Christopher Lewis is doing. It's awesome what everyone's doing. But, you know, I want to do it too. And we're supposed to. You know, I want to get the messages too. I mean, at least to me or my family or whatever. You know, everyone's not necessarily going to be a sanctioned, ascended master messenger. But in a way, you know, we all are. And the masters have said, you know, you're messengers too. You can be a messenger of family, messengers of love and children and health and whatever you're good at, really. So Okay, so this chapter is called So You'd Like to Become an Ascended Master. And it's a, I'll just go into it, and it's a story. And it's written for kids. I don't think I mentioned that. It's written for kids ages 7 to 13 year old. I'm sure it could maybe apply to other kids, but that was what Lady Master Mater requested when I read A Heart's Dream, which is one of the names we give to the messages from the masters through the Heart Center. So she asked for a spiritual curriculum for kids, and so I made an attempt at doing something because I thought something's better than nothing. So that's how this book was born. So
okay.
Anyhow, so without further ado, I'm going to read this to you. Hey,
okay.
Let me share, dude. Congratulations on one of the best choices you've ever made in your life. Or was it lifetimes? I knew you had it in you. What? You say, well, you know what you just decided, right? Yeah, I think so. You go, buddy. The decision to become an ascended master is a life-altering one. Take a seat while I talk you through this one. You reach behind you and find, conveniently, a soft, comfortable armchair. Sinking into its softness, you relax and begin thinking about your choice. Yeah, it was a big one, you think. Then again, maybe not. After all, for the longest time, people have dreamed of a heavenly afterworld in which to spend their existence. Whether it was the Native American happy hunting ground, the Australian Aboriginal dream time, or the Buddhist nirvana, or the Christian heaven, or any other variation. Did you know that almost all of the world believes in some form of afterlife? They used to. And almost all Native peoples do. Even the ancient Greeks did. There you go, you got the word Greeks in there.
Yes, I like that, thank you.
Well, yeah, you're okay with the idea. Not that you can change it by believing it or not. It either is or it isn't. You'll have to wait till you die to find out. But seriously, is there something you can do in this life that will affect how you are in the next? You shift uncomfortably in your chair, deep in thought. How can one choice made now affect the future of my life forever? The answers begin to flow into your mind. Well, in one sense, it doesn't matter. You can always make a new choice if you don't like the way your life is going. On the other hand, you won't be in this body forever. So it's a good time to make lasting choices now. So what do you want to believe, and how do you get there? Now, some believe in reincarnation, and I do have a chapter on that too, of course. But
uh-huh.
Do you really want to do that forever? It's good when you need it, but not forever. After all, who really wants to come back in diapers again and again and again, only to grow old and die? Forever. There's got to be a better way. Scratching your chin, you think about the two afterlives you know most about. Buddhist nirvana or Christian heaven. They both sound pretty good to you. One is bliss forever, the other heavenly garden forever, or thereabouts. But this is a new idea. It wasn't till today that you'd heard the idea of becoming an ascended master. Apparently, it's like Buddhist nirvana crossed with Christian heaven with a few extras thrown in. You would be okay with that. After all, you could handle prancing across the galaxy to some far-off galactic star or spending time learning higher technology with masters of divine science. Heaven is not the end of it all, just the beginning. All righty, you think, settling upon the idea. It has been a good choice, but what next? How to get there? You need a roadmap, but where? Involuntarily, you reach down into your pocket and pull out a map. Cool. Things are going well for you today. You hold it, you realize this is no ordinary map. It's personalized just for you, and it's a map showing you the path it takes to become an ascended master. As your eyes focus in on the details, you notice that there are many whys in your life, many places in your life where you will have to make a choice. You notice that while some choices don't matter so much, others will take you away from your path or lead you further ahead. Those are the ones you want to pay attention to. After reading the map over, you notice a note down at the bottom. Apparently, it's a little more complicated. To become an ascended master, you have to master yourself, thoughts, feelings, words, deeds, and ascend, merge with God, or maybe realize you already are part of God. And you also have to do this little thing called balance your karma, a.k.a. payback time. Another reason to make lots of good karma, not so much bad karma. Then there's this little issue of your divine plan. You came to do it, and you've got to do it. There's no way around it if you want to ascend. Fortunately, it's the thing your soul loves to do and is good at, so it's not an issue. Wow, so much to remember. Fortunately, you have this little map to remind you of the way. You fold it up neatly and stick it back carefully in your pants pocket. Yawning, you stand up. That's enough reading and seriousness for today. That's when you hear your mom calling, "Hey, wake up, sleepyhead. You got 10 minutes left for breakfast." That's the end of that chapter. So I never knew it was going to end on a, and it was actually like a dream or a dream experience. So, you know, I like that anyhow.
That is excellent. And again, it gives someone a very a basic understanding of human spiritual evolution. And it's fun and it's funny. And yet it's very on target and informative. Now, you had mentioned heart streams, and that is something that, as you said, is from the heart center community. It's the way that they identify communications from the masters. And one of the things a lot of people don't understand when they first approach ascensionism is that ascensionism is a living spirituality. It doesn't only exist in books and comprised of sayings that were recorded long ago. It is an ongoing process that was there in antiquity and continues to this day. And that provides you with a phenomenal experience in that you're part of a living stream rather than someone trying to decipher riddles that the ancestors left us.
I mean, there's a lot more I could have put in here, a lot of detail. And, for example, the I Am books talk about the ascension process. And one thing about the ascension that I never really understood till some while back is, there may be some specific processes in the etheric octave, standing on a dais and having the masters around you, and your frequency changes and your body changes, so on and so on. But it's also a process of constantly ascending, hopefully ascending, not descending, but it's an ongoing thing. It's like a lot of sweet Christians, bless their heart, kind of have the perspective that, well, whatever you do in life, and then all you die, and like, you're perfect. And everything's like great, but I think it's more like where you are in consciousness is not necessarily that much different when you're on the other side, you know. So so I think it's important to grow through our lives rather than waiting for some outside force to change us, which is, it's nice in a way, I guess, the idea, but then again, we wouldn't have done it, so would we really enjoy the satisfaction of the growth and the new state, I guess. But yeah, so like I said, it was just a fun, basic way to introduce the idea if someone's never heard anything about it. So
well, you did it quite well.
thank you. And I have pictures in there too, like there's a highway, and the highway straight ahead says good choices. You know, instead of saying the name of the town, you've got good choices. And then to the right, the exit, there's distractions. Because I think that's true. I mean, it's not, when I mention your divine plan, you have to do it. I think that we have a purpose, but it's not necessarily you have to do every single thing right. You have to have bought your clothes in this store. You have to have only lived in this particular place. You have to have only bought this car. I mean, that's just silly. It's the general idea. You know, we have a lot of choices in our life that don't necessarily make, they're not good or bad necessarily, but other ones, like, I guess, what we choose to believe or how we think or feel or react. That's like the deep stuff, you know. That's the deep stuff. So do you want to hear some more of the book or something different?
Of course. No, this is our learning from you because of your particular journey and your particular perspective. So you're doing awesome. Please share whatever you'd like.
Where to start? So, I mean, this book has a lot of stuff that is just, you know, I won't read a whole chapter, but just a lot of stuff that's funny. I think it's funny, of course. I wrote it. I've got a section on meditation, and actually it's on connecting to God through prayer or meditation or faith or whatever. And so we've got the girl meditating and the Kuan Yin Buddha meditating, you know, the Bodhisattva. And then we've got the cow meditating, and it says, have you heard of the cow who attained liberation? That's the Buddhist term for, you know, heaven, nirvana, or whatever. It was dyslexic and kept on repeating, om. Which, of course, if you know anything about, you know, mantras, om is like a primal great mantra. It's a wonderful one to do. And so it's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's so sweet at, you know, some of the evenings when there's enough time to talk to the kids in bed. And we have a 2-year-old, and sometimes she will join in, and it's so cute having this teeny little voice, you know, of course, a great spirit, but having this tiny little voice saying the om, it's incredible.
Indeed.
So I've got chapters on, go ahead.
No, I just said, yes, that is indeed a wonderful thing.
And I think the more you expose kids to things, the more they'll pick it up, you know. You can't force spirituality on kids, unfortunately, or fortunately. I mean, you might want to really get them to get the idea, but you just have to make it part of your life and offer, and they'll take whatever they want, and sometimes it might be less than you want, and other times they'll surprise you. You know,
yes.
I mean, my kids still fight, like, they're still kids, you know, they still fight and leave a mess in their bedrooms and complain about doing their jobs, unfortunately. But on the other hand, they're also in pretending that they're playing with their guardian angel when they go in to visit her house, you know, or their little gnome or fairy or something really sweet. And it's like, wow, that's really sweet. So, you know.
Now,
Go ahead. Now, I was going to say, so, like, I have a chapter on body image, which is kind of not necessarily something that everyone, like you and I, might have an issue with. But I think for a lot of young people, if you look at teen books, they're concerned about how they look because, you know, peer pressure is important and, or at least it seems important, you know, it's a pressure out there. And so in this chapter, I tried to turn them to the right source of importance, which is really the fact that God is inside them. This is the beauty of your soul. I mean, sure, you know, wear nice clothes and be clean, you know, look after yourself, be smart, all the rest, but the beauty and the value of you as a person is from what's inside of you. You know, it doesn't come from copying some superstar on TV, you know. So.
Right.
Fortunately, I'm over that age. But it can be a trying age. When you're in your teens or whatever, and it can be emotional, with hormones, and you're looking for why I'm here and who am I, and who am I to the world, and who am I to me, and, you know, what's my purpose, and it's just... I'm just glad I'm past that age.
Well,
the only time a woman ever... Go ahead.
We've all been through the teenage years, although I'm 60 now, or I'll be 60 very soon, I remember being a teenager and wonder sometimes what happened to the intervening years. And even though we've lived many lifetimes before we came here, we are given amnesia and we forget. So we experience the changes in the body and the demands of the society and the transition from being a child to an adult. It's a very difficult time for most. Gain our freedom, we gain our liberation, and we start to discover who we are, and hopefully look deeper into that to find who we actually are.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely a journey, I think. And, you know, hopefully we're always on that journey. And I guess each life we just kind of pick up where we left off last time, in a way, you know. I mean, there are definitely souls that are so deep and spiritual, even while they're kids, you know, and you're just like, wow, you know. So I have a chapter on reincarnation as well.
Okay.
And like I said, I have some little funny pictures here and there. Like I have a wagon wheel, you know, those old-fashioned wooden ones I used to have. And the wagon wheel is talking. He's got like a little caption, and he says, "Sometimes I feel like my life never stops revolving," which is called, you mean going around and around, right, being a wheel. And
uh-huh.
then coming in from the outside of the page, I've got someone else talking. "There actually is an end. Check it out in chapter 6, and that refers to the chapter on the ascension. So kind of trying to get the idea that, you know, what you do in this life, it's going to come back to you, because we have a chapter on karma as well. And if it doesn't come back this time and you haven't ascended, it's probably going to come back next time. So don't, you know, you can't escape God's truth and justice, and not to be threatening, but just we are accountable, I believe. A lot of people don't necessarily feel accountable. And
right.
I think if everyone felt really accountable, which is your conscience, right? You're supposed to feel accountable. You're supposed to hear that little voice, like, or that loud voice, ideally, that you shouldn't do that, you know. And I think our world would be in a much better place if we listened to that. So
I agree.
Yeah.
It seems like we're living in a time where that part of our being is we're being confronted with the fact that many people in places of power have turned that voice off or turned the volume on very low, and it's very disconcerting.
Right. Well, I feel like probably we all have to some degree. I can't even say that I haven't, but a journey in turning the volume up again and re-listening and tuning in, which is why I try to take a few minutes every night to just try to listen. And, you know, it's funny because it's hard for me. You know, I'm a spiritual person. I love singing spiritual songs. I've prayed to God for years and for hours on end, you know, not recently, but, in, you know, overall. And yet it's challenging to a part of me. I guess it's like the human ego or something. It likes to be in control. I think the human ego, and maybe it's like a self-protection, but it like wants to control what's going on. So to be able to kind of surrender to God and just kind of have like a blank state in your mind, not kind of blank for anything bad to enter, but to be open to, you know, a higher inspiration to calm they call it the monkey mind, you know, I think it's definitely a challenge for me and probably for other people in the West too, but probably for people that are like me, that are talkers too. The more you talk, you know, sometimes the talking is going on inside your head too. Yeah.
But the surrenders, when they finally come, always bring you back to the fact that you're surrendering a concept of yourself to a higher concept of yourself. And every realization, every step on the journey of ascension, you don't lose yourself. You actually find yourself
right.
to be greater than you thought you were before, but it feels like it feels like you're not you're giving something up when actually you're not. What you're giving up is your concept that was programmed into you when you were born into a particular society.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like which self are you giving up, and which self are you getting, and which part is you? You know, I still remember hearing on YouTube a talk by Eckhart Tolle, and he talks about how this whole thing happened to him and how he reached this point of intense, I guess, frustration and just being upset with himself and whatever. One night he said he couldn't live with himself. And then he thought, what is this self that I can't live with? Like, who am I? Am I the self that I can't live with? Or am I another self? Like, what's real? Which one of me is real, you know? So like you said, you don't really lose anything surrendering to God, but I do think that I don't know, if you're like me, you've got this human momentum there that likes to be in charge. And you gotta like tell it to be quiet sometimes. Yeah.
But that helps drive you forward too, to a point. So it's not a bad thing altogether.
I mean, we need a human brain, you know, and the mind of God's an important thing too. You know, it's interesting that we're supposed to act from the heart, but there's also the mind of Christ. So it's not like the mind is bad. You know, I guess you've got the threefold flame. You've got the mind is the yellow, right? Like the wisdom and the learning. And the heart,
yes.
You know, the listening to your heart, that's like the pink. And then actually doing it, the action, that's the blue. So
mm-hmm.
I guess it's all about balance, huh? Yeah.
Yes, and those colors and the flames, the intertwining flames, are a very powerful symbol for meditating on that dynamic,
mm-hmm.
which is essential to life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting. The colors are everywhere. I have them in your printer ink, right? Or cyan,
yes.
And the blue, whatever it's called, and the yellow. I mean, magenta and the three colors, you know. Even there you find the threefold flame colors. Yeah. So I was wondering if I could just read the contents of the book, since
sure.
I can't read the whole book, you know, unfortunately.
Okay,
so if you haven't quite got an idea of what the book's about enough yet that you're interested in, I'm just going to read the titles here so you can get a feel for what's actually in the book.
Okay.
And like I said, if you're interested in buying it but not sure, people can check it out on the Heart Center, which is free. You have to go through the store, you know, click it. It's like $0. Click buy it, add to cart, you know. That's how you get it. And then if they like it, they can buy it, you know, to share with their kids, their grandkids, their friends, neighbors, themselves. I don't care, anyone. So, chapter one is Who Are You? A Journey in God's Self-Discovery. And we talked about that a little bit last time. That's just talking about
yes.
being spiritual from heaven. You know, this is pretty basic. So maybe this is too basic for some of your listeners, but for people that they might want to share it with, they might not have had that kind of exposure. Chapter two, So Why Am I Here? What Do I Do With My Life? So that's also talking about that kind of thing. It's also talking about your mission and your divine plan and how we actually come with a purpose. And we're not just
mm-hmm.
like here by accident and to kind of flop around like seals and wonder what we're supposed to be doing. So chapter three, Your Actions Matter. Here's Why and What to Do About It. So that's talking about karma, and which I think is, it's becoming very well known these days, which I think is great because, you know, I once heard El Moria say in a previous organization something to the effect of, if people knew better, they would do better. You know, and if they knew about karma and, I guess, reincarnation, they would probably make better choices too, you know. You know, because we've become in some ways a little bit of a cop-out society, I think, where we kind of expect the government to make everything right and pay for us for everything and, you know, lawsuits that can be frivolous and just the funny things that go on. So the chapter four, Being There, Done That, that's the reincarnation one. Chapter five, You Are a Powerful Spiritual Being. So this just talks about, you know, how we have a divine power. We have more power than we know. And, you know, last time, Hercules, I talked with you about my experiment with rice. Remember that one?
Yes. Yes, I remember.
Yeah, well, it's still going. It's still working. So I'll just share with your audience. It was three jars of rice. This is based on the work of Dr. Masaru Emoto, who has now passed on, the you know, renowned and respected Japanese researcher, and who researched water and wrote The Power of Water and these different books about water. And he looked at the water crystals and so on. So I found this experiment, as I mentioned last time, and you basically just stick labels on jars of identical jars of cooked rice. Or I think he used raw, uncooked rice, but I use cooked rice.
Mm-hmm.
And you just say those words to the jars of rice every day. You've got one that you ignore, one that has bad words, and one that has good words. And you won't believe it, but my good words one. How many weeks is this now? It was like 7 or 8 weeks last time, so it must be going on like 11. I didn't count. But rice it still looks fine, and it's not sealed, and you can tell that because if you push down the lid, it's got a little bit of a give, you know. It hasn't got the
mm-hmm.
button up, but you can tell it's not sealed. And, you know, you can't even cook rice to preserve it properly like this. You're supposed to not can rice with high pressure because you can't get the core of the rice hot enough to kill all the germs. So,
right.
I mean, I showed my mother-in-law, and she's like, okay, what are you doing to preserve it? I said, love and gratitude. You know, the main thing I found is love and gratitude. But, you know, as I've told my family, who are now trying the experiment themselves, they've started it. You know, the more it worked, the more I was motivated to keep going. So I'm just, like, you know, blessing the rice, and I'm praying over the rice. And it's kind of silly, but it's amazing. I mean, somehow the power, the connection here is, you are a powerful spiritual being. That's what I was mentioning. It's the chapter in my book. And it's like, do I even realize how powerful I am? Do you? We probably don't. I mean, I guess I can't really speak for you, but I mean, and then you hear stories of children who are, you know, you have young children, and there might be some terrible tragedy. I forgot where I heard this, but like, you know, the car falls on top of the dad as he's fixing something, and the girl comes over and she lifts the car up.
Right.
Story. You know, things are superhuman. Well, how does that work? Humanly, if you didn't have the power, you know, maybe someone was praying for those who need help. Maybe the masses overshined her. Maybe she didn't know she couldn't. Who knows what? But the power that we have is amazing. You know, and then you hear about people like the Essenes, which I'm reading about in the Way of the Essenes, the book that David recommended to us, and how the healers, and they did use herbs, but they also used their hands, and they kind of made themselves resonate with the individual who was sick, and then kind of tried to raise his vibration, or there are other techniques they used. They were able to read auras and see what areas were dark in the body and which areas had problems, and lots of different things they did. But the point is, they were using their spiritual power. They were using their God-given power. They weren't like, here's a drug, here's a prescription you can take from here's Proxal or some funny, you know, drug. It was just that God energy, which we all have. So that's amazing to me. Yeah. So,
that is amazing.
So, and then we've got heaven is powerful spiritual beings too. So that talks about the ascended masters. Just as it, you know, like the rest of the book, it's a basic introduction that, you know, we've got, you know, the Eastern masters, you know, Gautama Buddha and Maitreya and Kuan Yin, and then you got, you know, the modern saints like Mother Teresa and Padre Pio and so on. You know, you've got sort of the, I guess you call them Western saints, I don't know, you know, the teachers like Jesus and just lots of different, you know, masters from all walks of life, and just introducing that idea that there's more than Jesus out there. And so I have this funny picture in that chapter of Jesus, and a little cartoon here. He says, I'm not the only one up here. So, you know, Krishna and Shiva and all those kinds of things. You know, in Palace Athena, you know, a lot of the Greek gods and goddesses are, you know, Vesta and Venus and Hercules and God Mercury. You know, that's amazing. They actually had the names of certain ascended beings, or cosmic beings, way back then. You know, and we just thought they were just made up names, but who knows, you know.
No,
that's amazing.
They're not. Hermes, for instance, left us Hermetic literature.
Yes.
The Theosophia, which is Theosophy and Theurgia, Theurgy, the symbology behind the myths. Out of Theurgy came astrology. So a lot of the wisdom tradition, the bedrock upon which all of the modern manifestation rests, were given to us directly from Hermes and these other Olympian beings.
Right. And it's just, you know, kind of building on what you said, I think that, you know, the regular view of society is pretty limited, sorry to say, but, you know, it's like, okay, well, there was caveman, and then it was, like, a little bit more advanced, and then they pulled the stones up the pyramids in Egypt, and then people got advanced like they are today, you know. But it kind of completely skips, you know, ancient civilizations of Atlantis or Lemuria or, you know, other golden age or amazing civilizations that may have technology way beyond us, you know. So, you know, like you said, there's a lot more technology, a lot more wisdom and literature and history, and a lot of stuff happened in the past that not everyone knows about. And it's amazing. I just love, you know, archaeology, and when they uncover this ancient, you know, pyramid, like the Bosnian pyramids or whatever, it's just, it's so exciting to, I guess, expand our mind and perspective of things. You know, it's not, history isn't done. It's not over, you know, it's, we're always learning about ancient civilizations, so it's very exciting. So we got to then chapter 7, which I read, about the, so you want to become an ascended master, that one there. Then we got chapter 8, tests are coming. I don't mean school tests. That's just kind of like a little reference to, I guess, peer pressure, you know, friends and karma descending, and just kind of thinking about, you know, choose people that are going to help lead you the right direction in your life, and, you know, be true to you, kind of. Then we got chapter 9, God's Connection, so I mentioned that. And just talked also about different things, such as the story of this girl. This is a great book that I read. I can't think of the book right now. Here we are, Children and the Supernatural by Jennifer Toldio. Sorry. And I referenced her story, or retold a little bit of it in my own words. You know, this girl had this experience of Jesus. She was so childlike and so full of faith that she invited Jesus to her tea party, you know, because she'd heard someone at some local Christian camp saying something about, how about you invite Jesus to your next date? Well, she wasn't exactly that old. She was 5 years old, so. But she invited Jesus, and in her, I guess, spiritual eye, she saw Jesus come in the room, sit down, talk with her, whatever, and do all these things, and even take her on this spiritual excursion, if you like, in these, like, heavenly chariots. And I'm wondering what happened, what would have happened if her mom had opened the door. You know, would she have seen a little girl playing there by herself, or would she have been gone? But it's an incredible story in there, which I, you know, include. Because it's talking about, you know, different ways to connect with God. And sometimes faith is one of them. Probably one that I could do with some more of. But just, you know, I think it's not always so hard to connect with God. We just think it is. And this is one thing I've been thinking about lately. Like, that the whole idea of, like, the space of your heart and how it's important to be in that space. And it's like, it's all it is like a decision, I guess. I mean, there have been books and books written about this, so I'm not speaking from any other knowledge. But it's like the choice to be loving or to be centered, or, you know, there's different words, calm, or not that you can't be joyful. It's just, I think if we act from that point, it's like we've got everything else covered just about, you know.
Right.
It's not that we have to do some fancy invocation, and if we get the words wrong, and we join the wrong spiritual group, and we didn't say the right litany of prayers, or we didn't give the right amount of money to the right place, or whatever, that, or we didn't say the right thing at the right time of day, that we're going to miss out on it. God is always available, you know, whatever term you want to use for God. I like God because I kind of grew up with that. You know, it's pretty basic and all-encompassing, but the divine, the creator, the universal, the divine mother, whatever, you know.
The universal is very accommodating.
Oh, yeah, totally. Chapter 10, so that's the one I sort of mentioned about, you know, body image. It's called Are You Good Looking or What? Which basically summarizes that you are, but really it's the light and the love and it's God that's within you. You know, and sure, you should be healthy and look after your body and so on, you know. To see yourself as God does, you know. And then chapter 11, Music on Your Spiritual Path. So this is an interesting one because a lot of young people are interested in all kinds of music. And sometimes it's constructive music. And, you know, you probably also hear a lot of people driving by, you know, blasting their radio or whatever it is. And listening to some of the lyrics that come out of there, they're not always the best, you know, for programming your own brain.
Right.
You know, so I was trying to get kids to think about how what they listen to, it's not just like a passing fad that's like fun. You know, you kind of take in the energy and the consciousness of the person who created that music, you know. And I really liked the interesting thing that I found, this classical composer, Joseph Haydn, he used to dress up, you know, before he composed his music because he felt that he was going to commune with God. And so it was actually a spiritual experience to him. So I imagine that his music would be, you know, reflective of that, you know, whereas some people, as we know, they compose music under the influence of drugs or other things that we would consider to be, you know, maybe astral or the lower realms, not necessarily where we would like to be ourselves. And then I also have this interesting quote from Shakespeare as well, and he said, "Music oft hath such a charm to make bad good, and good provoke to harm." So, of course, it's hard to understand that language they use, but basically, you know, music can influence you. You know, when I talk about how, you know, in certain public places they play some sort of classical type music or, you know, that type of music compared to, say, some rap or punk rock or whatever, you know, I say, well, why do they do that? You know, because they're trying to influence the groups around there not to do their graffiti. You know, they just don't feel like getting at their graffiti guns to, you know, Mozart, Einach Kleiner, not to music or something, you know, or some poker. It doesn't sound right. So I think it's an interesting topic because it's so around us today, and it's a great part of life. I love music, and
yes.
I think It can pull us up or it can pull us down. And, you know, it probably changes. You know, you might have a favorite piece of music one year and you might, you know, come back, you know, a few years later and you're like, I don't even like that anymore. Or that just doesn't express me. Or there's something else that is higher, even though that's kind of okay or kind of nice. So I thought that was a good chapter to include in there. And one more thing about this chapter is I talk a little bit about the music of the spheres idea. So we cover a lot in here, which is a really interesting concept about everything having a musical note or a tone, and even the planets themselves, you know, whether it's, I'm not sure whether it's physical or whether it's more like on the etheric level, because we know we have our own keynote too. You know, the ascended masters have their keynote or their a piece of music that kind of attracts their electronic presence of light and so on. And they may have more than one as well, of course. But I think it's interesting, like, you know, and I came up with the thought that as we progress spiritually, like, you know, in the realms of light, I think that our keynote, if you like, or our special piece becomes even more complex and more beautiful and more amazing. It's like comparing like a little tune to like a symphony of some amazing, you know, I guess a theme song or something, you know. And then I also talk about how there's interesting stuff called cymatics, which I wasn't sure of the word of it before, but I'd read about this type of thing. When you play sound through a substance, so like sand, for example, it'll actually make patterns for you. And when you change the vibration, the sound itself, so you have like a metal plate, and you sprinkle some, you know, clean sand on there, and then you have this pitch there that you play on there, and it will make these patterns. And as you turn up higher and higher, you see the sand actually vibrating, and then all of a sudden it's like flips over to a new pattern, a new shape, and it's like watching creation in a way, because we have in the Bible, of course, about how in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Well, there are many, you know, spiritual interpretations. What's this exactly? What's the Word? Is that Jesus? Is that whatever? But just taking it literally, the Word, that's like the sound, the voice, the, you know, I mean, that, you could take it that way too. So it's just amazing to think about that we just kind of take it for granted and we just enjoy whatever we're listening to, whatever's going on. But we don't necessarily think about the fact that there is a tremendous power. I mean, if you think about prayers and mantras and decrees and whatever, you know, songs, and these are all words. You know, I used to think, well, why does it matter, you know, if I say these words? Because I say words all day long. And then I had to kind of conclude that those words were important too. You know, maybe a little different if you say them, you know, in the name of, you know, a certain master or your higher self, and you say it with great intention and so on. But I think to some degree, it's still true.
Yes.
If one word is important, surely all the words are important, you know. So that's interesting.
It's very interesting. And you seem to focus a lot on harmonics, you know, the words that create patterns in rice or with metal filings and so that seems something that comes through in who you are and what you do.
Well, I found that the heartbeat, and then the body is kind of, you know, the heart is like the center of the body, and the sound of some pieces of music, such as a waltz, actually are kind of in harmony with your body in that sense. And then you have other pieces of music, like I guess typical rock music is known by what's called the syncopation, the syncopated beat, which it is in some classical music, but it's not the non-stop beat, not the constant beat. And that's kind of opposite the beat of your heart. So, you know, some people say that sets up a kind of a stress in your body or a little bit of tension. And in some ways people like that, but is that the healthiest thing? You know, I don't know. I mean, there's even funny studies. You can find these online about, like, cows preferring classical music when they're going to be milked, you know, or hens preferring classical milk to lay larger eggs, or stuff like that, or dogs kind of calm down when they listen to it. So it's just fascinating. It's something I've always loved to study about. And that's actually the last picture there, it looks like, with the one on music, which is a pretty long one. I think it's the longest one of all. And you think of just the music of heaven, too. I mean, what must it sound like in the other realms and the octaves of light? And it's just interesting. So I have this funny little cartoon picture on the back page. I found a picture of these. They kind of look like three Japanese, not geishas, like ladies, you know, dressed up in their kimono type things. And they're all playing a musical instrument from somewhere in Asia. And they're all I've got these thought bubbles because, of course, if you're in the heavenly realms, you can have telepathy, right? You don't have to open your mouth and shut your mouth and open it and shut it to communicate. So they're all like thinking, you know, with each other with these. And the first one says, if only earthlings could hear these sounds, they'd be raised right to heaven itself. And then another one says, you're so right. I mean, she thinks, sorry, because they're all thinking with each other. And then the last one says, let's make our sounds audible to all who listen deeply enough. You know, and it's amazing. I wonder what it would sound like. And you've heard probably, like on YouTube, stories of people that on rare occasions have actually done some recording, and they believe that like an angel voices are being recorded with their own. Have you ever heard that?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of, you know, personal. You've got to decide whether or not you think it's actually true, because the recording's not super clear. But I think there's a good possibility that it is. I mean, why can't God perform miracles here and there? Why can't the invisible, the normally invisible, become visible at times? You know, why can't the other realms step through the veil, as you've seen occasionally, you know, you'll see a photograph that you see this white form over somebody, you know, like, you know, they're like their guardian angel or something protecting them. So I think heaven is so real and it's so with us, and that's just an awesome thing. So
that's the book. It is an awesome thing. That's an awesome tour of the book. Thank you. And
the whole time just talking about that.
What is your next book going to be? Because I know you have at least a couple of dozen books in you. So what is your next work going to be?
It's going to be related to the Divine Mother. That's the
awesome.
I'm not sure of the title, but that's what I'm working on with my my journaling. But the rest of it's all in alchemy. So until it appears, it hasn't appeared yet. But yeah, that's what it relates to. So taking a different angle. Yeah.
Now, our journey.
The Divine Mother and women in spirituality.
Okay. That'll be the next topic then. Next time you're on, we will discuss that. Our journey for today is nearing its end. So.
the only thing that's appeared so far here is all these books in my journal. Because, you know, I'm trying to get something. And this is not something I've done before. And I'm seeking to, you know, as I listen to the Heart Center, and I love the Heart Center daily, and I'm a part of it. And I do appreciate the inspiration that I get from, you know, from David and Heart Friends and all that. And yet, at times, a part of me is like, I want to do it too, in the sense of I desire to not only hear about someone's wonderful experiences and, you know, their intuition and their beliefs, but I desire to go beyond that, which we're supposed to, of course. It certainly is never going to discourage. It's always encouraged completely that we would ask our own higher self and ask our heart and intuit it or whatever the word is, you know. So, like I said, this is a new thing for me. But if you want to hear one thing, I can read one fun thing from my journal.
Okay.
This is not related to the Divine Mother, though. This was just something that I wrote. And, again, the reason why I chose this is I liked how it ended because I didn't think it would end like that. So I guess to me, like I said earlier, trying to get my human brain out of the way, you know, so when I feel like it ends different than I actually planned, I'm like, I feel like more there's a bit of guidance there. So anyhow, so this is just two pages of hand-scribbled notes. It won't take too long. Two small pages.
Sure.
It's called The Path to the Summit is Not Easy. That's what I titled it.
Okay.
The path to it is not easy. It is fraught with danger at every step. Temptations lie in the lowlands, discouraging souls from ever starting or setting foot upon the summit. on the summit itself, one may grow weary. The climb is steep, and the climbers may be few. Yet we must press on to lead the way and forge the path for which one day many will follow. Do not despair, then, when there are not others beside you on your journey. When you think you walk alone, a million angels walk with you to guide your feet and comfort you, even as they did Jesus in the garden. In the hour of your greatest trial, know that you are not alone. This too shall pass, and one day you shall find yourself at the top of the mountain of being. It is a mystery. One climbs a mountain, and yet what is one ascending but oneself and one's own awareness? A mountain indeed. So I just like how that turned out. But yeah.
That is very beautifully written, and you read it very powerfully as well. That'll be the topic of our next conversation. I would like to have Charles at first, so I get to know him a little bit better, too. But I definitely would like you on again. And the Divine Mother is a topic that should touch everyone's heart. So we will plan to do that as soon as possible. Before we go, aside from the Heart Center community, and you can give their contact information again, is there any other links you would like to share with people that would help them experience your work?
Just to remind, because I didn't really talk about the blog that I have, that on the Heart Center, actually, you can find it on the Heart Center homepage right now. If you scroll down, you'll find it says Spiritual Parenting Made Easy. It's just a link to the page. And that has, every month I have a new article, just a few pictures with inspirational quotes by the masters, which we didn't get time to talk about tonight.
we will.
And yeah, that's basically it. But it's just another way for anyone that's a parent or knows people who are parents or maybe has little kids in their care to hopefully be inspired with just another perspective on introducing spirituality, including it, and growing together. And I'm welcoming people's comments and all the rest. And like I said, if you're interested in the book, anyone, it's also on the homepage. I'm really lucky; they must like it. I kind of gave it to the Heart Center anyhow. Spirituality for Kids, Discover the Real You, and it's an ebook. So that's the ebook. And you can buy it through the Heart Center, or like you said, on Amazon, if you type in Spirituality for Kids, the numeral 4. If you type in F-O-R, you will have more trouble finding it sometimes. So that works there. So that's about all. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Serena. It was wonderful speaking with you and listening to you read the things that you had written. And I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
That's great. I had fun. I was a little nervous about it, but just ask the masters to use me, and that's what we're all here for. We're all here to be instruments of our higher self and embody that higher self and realize that's who we really are, So thanks for having me, Hercules.
And thank you for being here, and thank you for embodying and expressing your higher self so wonderfully. Say hi to Charles, and have a great day.
Thanks. You too, Hercules.
Thank you. We're going to listen to Dave the Bard's Cauldron Born, and then we'll be back, and I will share our latest quest.
See how the land is made in silver hue. You feel so lonely. Come with me and let me show there are others just like you who feel the powers of earth, sea, and sky, of dragon and fairy and shades of the night. Hear the call of our ancestors of blood and bone, of womb and tomb and standing the powers of earth, sea, and sky, of dragon and fairy and shades of the night. He calls to his ancestors of blood and bone, of womb and tomb and standing stone. Lady, stir your cauldron well, chant your words and sing your spell. Deep within the darkened hall, hear the goddess Ceridwen call. Come and taste of the cauldron's brew and magic she will give to you. You will dance in the eye of the storm, your Ceridwen's children, the cauldron born. A charm of silver, the gypsy said when he was just 17. Your future, I'll tell you, every thread and turn is there to be seen. She took his hands, tracing the lines, searching for patterns and looking for signs. Your life a construction, one day you will see. Through the illusion and into the dream. Lady, stir your cauldron well, chant your words and sing your spell. Deep within this darkened hall, hear the goddess Ceridwen call. Come and taste of the cauldron's brew and magic she will give to you. You will dance in the eye of the storm, your Ceridwen's children, the cauldron born. So we stand on this hill, our shadows are cast by the moon, chanting words, our charm, our spell of power, our witch's rune. We call to the powers of earth, sea, and sky, of dragon and fairy, and shades of the night. We call to our ancestors of blood and bone, of womb and tomb and standing stone. Lady, stir your cauldron well, chant your words and sing your spell. Deep within this darkened hall, hear the goddess Ceridwen call. Come and taste of the cauldron's brew and magic she will give to you. You will dance in the eye of the storm, your Ceridwen's children, the cauldron born. Oh lady, stir your cauldron well, chant your words and sing your spell. Deep within this darkened hall, hear the goddess Ceridwen call. Come and taste of the cauldron's brew and magic she will give to you. You will dance in the eye of the storm, your Ceridwen's children, the cauldron born. You're the cauldron born.
Greetings Hercules, and welcome back to Pride of Olympus. I am your host, Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm going to do something a little bit different. I've just declared that we'll be starting the quest for the Serenian Hind, and I want to explain a little bit about what that means. I have had in the past the Nature Quest as part of the Elysium Project. And the Elysium Project's goal is to create the best of all worlds. And that's one of our Age of Heroes initiatives, of which I shall share some information a little later on. But we're just going to go over this quest, and I'm going to play some music. In Greek mythology, the Peloponnesian region of Arcadia represented the unspoiled wilderness and nature's untamed splendor. This association has been reinforced since antiquity. It was strengthened through centuries of Western art and literature and persists well into the present day as our ideal of a pristine terrestrial paradise. Arcadia was dedicated to the Olympian Artemis and teemed with wildlife. It was also home to all manner of nature spirits, demihumans, and fabulous beasts. The actual Arcadia has long since been subdued by climatic changes and organized human endeavor. Though it still contains pocket of wilderness, it currently boasts a busy motorway, a coal mine, a thermoelectric power station, and miles of potato farms. In honor of the Arcadian ideal, the paradise lost, my nature quest focused on preserving our planet's natural beauty and rich biodiversity in places where it still existed. I started a website. This was back in 2015, 2016, mostly, but the roots of it were in 2014. And the website chronicled my personal journey as it unfolded during that time, the dedicated people I met, the worthwhile endeavors I discovered, the diverse initiatives I launched or lent my energies toward attaining. I offered also a wide variety of workshops, games, and other activities that increased one's knowledge and appreciation of nature and mythology. That continued for a while. I became a member of the Tenafly Environmental Commission for a while. And I'm going to read you what they're all about. The Environmental Commission promotes an environmental, ecological, conservation, and natural resource program for the borough of Tenafly. The commission has the power to study and make recommendations to the mayor and council concerning open space preservation, water resources management, air pollution control, solid waste management, noise control, soil and landscape protection, and protection of flora and fauna. And it was a great honor to serve on this committee and be part of the conversations that took place there and the decisions that were made. I got to meet a lot of people and I became aware of many different causes like the Clean Water Action Committee and especially Valerie Huddle, who is in Englewood. She's one of our assembly people, and she's extremely awesome and focused on preserving the community. I'm going to be playing songs in between these explanations to kind of break up my words. So I think I will play the song We Are the Wick, which I've never heard before. So let's explore it together. It's by Castalia Alexandrian.
The flame that is the love which
listeners, and welcome back to Pride of Olympus. This is Hercules Invictus, your host, talking about our new quest for the Cerenean Hind. And just as mythically, we met Artemis a little while ago, now we're going to meet Orion the Hunter. Though Artemis fiercely protected the wilderness and wild animals, she was also renowned as a divine huntress. Her only paramour, Orion, was also a fabled hunter. Together, the mythic couple, accompanied by their beloved dogs, would pursue game in the wilds of Arcadia. Of gigantic stature, clad in the pelt of a lion and brandishing a gnarled club, Orion is an embodiment of the lunar strongman, a son of Poseidon, who represents elemental water, rather than Zeus, who represents elemental air. There are several different versions of Orion's controversial career as a hero and the circumstances that led to his death. In one version, it was his irresponsible hunting practices and his boast that he would one day kill all the beasts on Earth that proved his undoing. The powers sent Scorpios, also known as Scorpio, yes, the zodiac Scorpio, a giant scorpion, to humble and destroy him. And despite his divine parentage, his great strength, his peerless hunting skills, and the love of a goddess, the scorpion succeeded in vanquishing him. Zeus immortalized Orion as a constellation at the request of Artemis. To honor those whom Orion had wronged, the scorpion was placed in the heavens as well. Orion's epic battle with Scorpio continues to this day, and it can be viewed in our night sky in modern times. We, the human race, are Orion, and Orion is also an earlier version of the hero Heracles, or as he's known, the Theban Hercules. Now, the quest for the Cerenean Hind is something that arises from these tales, and we will now go to the mythos of the Theban Hercules, a.k.a. Heracles. Having vanquished the Nemean lion and the Lernaean hydra, the Theban Hercules was dispatched to Cerenea to capture the hind. The hind, or female deer, had golden antlers like a stag and was sacred to the Olympian Artemis. It was said that it could outrun an arrow in flight that had a shiny metallic hooves. The task of capturing the hind unharmed took Hercules about a year to accomplish, and his path even took him to Hyperborea in the far north, where some say the hind, its protectress Artemis, and her brother Apollo all had their origin. With the living trophy of his third labor in hand, Heracles made his way back towards Tirintha and the palace of his royal cousin Evrystheus. En route, he encountered the twins, Artemis and Apollo. The sun god promptly challenged and fought our hero for possession of the hind. Artemis terminated the contest when Heracles promised to release the fabulous beast once his labor was deemed completed by the king. Although Evrystheus wanted the sacred deer to grace his menagerie, Heracles kept his promise and let it go free. So the quest for the Cerenean hind is not about hunting deer. It is about preserving deer. And that is one of the first steps we're going to be taking. I have gotten involved again through Dr. Julie O'Connor with different organizations here in New Jersey that protect the lives of animals. And I'm going to do all I can to make sure that deer and bear, because bear were also sacred to Artemis, and several other clauses that were of interest to the goddess, have the attention they deserve here in the Garden State. And one of the things that I had started doing when this was called my Nature Quest was I started awarding Champion of Arcadia awards to some of the individuals I encountered at that time because they stood out as exceptional and deserving of special recognition. To truly honor the Arcadian ideal and dedicated their lives to preserving our planet's natural beauty and rich biodiversity in places where it still existed. And I got involved in also in the Demarest Nature Center, and I served on the board there for a while. And they were an awesome organization, and they were involved with protecting and preserving northeastern New Jersey's natural habitats. And in 2014, I started them. I started assisting them with their 5K and fun runs, and helped out at the Oktoberfest. In January 15, I became a full-fledged board member, and I started focusing on assisting with school programs, expanding the scope and frequency of workshops, and public relations. I was also involved with several other Demarest Nature Center projects, such as maintaining the bird and dog stations throughout the Nature Center. Unfortunately, I could not continue with the Tenafly Environmental Commission or the Demarest Nature Center because of scheduling that was conflicting at the time. But now I will slowly be involving myself increasingly more and more so that I can do some good in the world. I will also be reviving my Arcadian workshops, and these included Meet Your Power Animal, Nature Spirits and Myth and Folklore, Nature Spirits and Magic and Mysticism, Demigods, Demihumans and Mythic Monsters, and a bunch of other similarly titled educational experiences. So that's what was going on before. That's where I'm starting to build now, and I will keep everybody on Facebook informed about what is happening with that quest, and at some point I'll be inviting other people to join in. We're going to listen to Dave Labarde's Antler Crown and Standing Stone is our next song.
I'm the voice within the tree. I am boy, I am man, the face of the changing man. And I have been your constant guide from your caves on the mountainside. We have walked hand in hand. Love weaves a tapestry, eternal threads air is cold, the sky is grey. Where am I this winter's day? Bones of trees, fallen leaves, the time of the winter queen. But through the wind and snow and rain, know that a part of me remains. Holly stands evergreen.
And welcome back to Pride of Olympus. I am your host, Hercules Invictus, and this is the second half of the show where I'm just sharing with you some of the portions of my previous quest that led to this new quest, and soon I'll be inviting others to join this quest. And now we're going to talk about a part of my nature quest that still isn't clear. But anyway, here goes. The constellation of Hercules was often called the stag in pre-Roman times. This hints of layers of legend long lost to us. We do not know what these association meant, but we do know that antlered deer fraternities have existed since the Stone Age and have given birth to all sorts of odd folklore and strange speculations. In this day and age, the benevolent and protective order of elks bears the mantle of this truly ancient tradition of fellowship and community service. A review of their website did not grant any insights as to why the elks may be key to my nature quest, but aside from my associations of nature quest activities with the Theban Hercules' third library, there were following synchronistic connections. On Earth Day in 2014, when I first started reintroducing myself to Tenafly, I also wandered into a rescue pet garage sale fundraiser at the Tenafly Elks Lodge. Mark Zinna, a once and future member of the Tenafly Council, whose re-election I supported, identified himself to me as an elk and said good things about the order and its members. Jack and Dr. Julia Connor were connected with the elks. In fact, Jack introduced himself to me as an elk and praised the order highly and invited me to look into the local chapter and its activities. With all these signs pointing the way, how could I resist the invitation? So on Thursday, March 10, 2016, I was initiated into the order, and we held a Mythic Atlantis event there in the local lodge. So that adventure continues. In the interim, I also was a fill-in minister. So that was an awesome and incredible experience. So these are the elements or highlights of the elements of my past quest. And this is the foundation upon which the future quest is beginning. I have all of this on our old Nature Quest website, which I'm taking down, and I will be representing it very soon. So I wanted to share it before it was no longer accessible. We're going to play Merlin Am I, and then that'll conclude tonight's program.
Thank you. The land and the sky.
Greetings and welcome back to Pride of Olympus. Thank you for joining us tonight, and I'm looking forward to having you here again next week when the Pride of Olympus returns. Joyous journeys, many blessings. Until next time, this is Hercules Invictus, signing off.
Olympian blessings to all who have joined us on our adventure. Now, go forth and create a better world, one filled with light and love. On behalf of the Pride of Olympus and her crew, may your journeys be joyous.